Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services created specifically for the cooperative's member owners to meet the needs of rural America, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, point-of-sale financing, and risk management options, helping farm families succeed today and tomorrow.
From the Gleacher Center in Chicago, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of April, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. We're here at the Gleacher Center for the USDA Data Users Group meeting, and we'll talk with Lance Honig. He's the chief of the Fields Crop Branch for USDA NASS out of Washington, D.C. They're charged with collecting all of the data that comes off of farm fields across the United States, and then they hand some of that off to the World Agricultural Outlook Board. He'll tell us something about why they're here and what they hope to learn. Speaking of which, Jerry Goodell is here as well from the Price Futures Group. He's got some things that he'd like to ask Lance and the rest of the crew from USDA. We'll hear about that. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast. That with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. So stay with us. Should be a good program from Chicago. This is Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's what the numbers look like in Chicago for this Tuesday afternoon. May corn today up 2 3/4, $3.81 1/4 the settlement price. July at 390, up 2.5, and September 397 1/4, 2 1/4 higher. December corn up 2 1/4 at 406 1/2, and the March at 414 1/4, up 2 1/4. May futures at 418 1/2, 2.5 cents higher, and July of next year up 2.5 cents at $4.22 1/4. From the soy complex, May beans up 1.5 cents at $10.22 1/4. July at 10.34, up 1 3/4. And August at 10.36, 1.5 cents higher. September 10.31 3/4, up 1 cent. November up 0.5 cents at 10.28 3/4. January of next year unchanged at $10.33 3/4 cents per bushel. Bean oil futures down 3 at 31.01, and the bean meal up 30 cents at 372.10. Wheat futures in the May contract 11 cents higher for the soft red at $4.72 1/2. July up 9 3/4 at 4.84 1/4. Hard red July up 9 1/4 at $5.12, and the spring wheat up 3 cents at $6.05 in the September contract. Live cattle futures, the April contract at 121.10, down 62 1/2 cents. June, however, up 17 1/2 at $105 1/2. Everything the rest of the way out was lower for the day. Feeder cattle, April contract up 7 1/2 at 139.10. The main, 45 lower at $140.15. Lean hogs for the day in the May contract, 55 cents lower at 67.45. June at 74.82 1/2, down $1.55 for the afternoon. In the outside markets, crude oil in the June at $67.79, 85 cents lower. July at 67.55, down 93. Ethanol futures 2 2/10 cents lower at $1.46 8/10 cents per gallon. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.12 8/10, 1 2/10 cents lower. And the gasoline wholesale price down 2 8/10 cents to $2.09 5/10 cents on the RBOB. The natural gas at $2.78, that's up 4 cents even. Dow Jones Industrial Average now down 534 points. It's at 23,878. The U.S. dollar at 90.52 is down 0.185. And the gold futures for the day at $1,331.60, up $9.10. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. Mostly cloudy skies, a low of about 45 degrees, northeast winds at 6 to 9. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, a high of 60, north winds at 11 to 13. That'll dry things out. It'll gust 23 tomorrow. Mostly clear on Wednesday evening, will drop to 36. That northeast wind will lay down to 3 to 8 miles an hour. And then on Thursday, we'll have sunny skies, a high of 65. Winds will be light and variable, about 5 miles an hour in the afternoon. Partly cloudy on Thursday evening, a low of 44, a south-southwest wind at 3 to 7. And Friday, a chance of showers, 30% only before 1 p.m. Partly sunny, a high of 60 degrees. On a north wind at 8 to 13, gusting to 21. On Saturday evening, we'll have mostly clear skies and about 40 degrees. During the day, Saturday, by the way, we'll go to 66 under sunny skies. And on Sunday, sunny skies and 69 degrees. A more complete look at the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of the half hour.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson is now here from L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Hey, good afternoon to you, Wayne. You getting a bit of sunshine there today, finally?
No, we're still overcast here. We had light showers this morning and continues to stay overcast, so looks like we'll be out of the field again another day.
And I was looking at the numbers in Chicago. Looks like it was a fairly quiet day there for corn and soybeans.
Very quiet day. In fact, we had a you know, narrow range, about 4 cents in the corn that way. So a little bit of an up, and we did see a little bit of a bounce when it was announced that Nunchkin is going to be going to China to negotiate some trade deals here, try to get some of these tariffs to stop, and that was a little bounce we saw after lunch today.
Did I see that the Argentines had imported some more soybeans as well?
The Argentines did buy more beans this morning, some for this year and some for next year, and that was the first announcement we've had in about 7 days. So that was good to see, and that helped bring the beans back from the negative side of things when they announced that also, along with the trade delegation.
It appears that the trade has not gotten worried, and it's only, what, the 24th day of April, very much yet, at least, about the planting of the corn and the soybean crops. Do we have to wait another week before that happens?
Well, I think it is. You know, we got the 6 to 10 day forecast is for above normal temperatures and below normal moisture for the Midwest, and the 8 to 14 day forecast is for normal for the Midwest. And as you look at some of the things, you got Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, sort of the dry area of coming over that time period. So it does look like we're going to be able to get some field work done in the next 2 weeks.
Producers calling you while they've got some downtime to ask about where the markets are headed, and what kinds of answers do you have for them, if any?
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, along the way, we're looking at all sorts of different things here, but you know, I think we're looking to either sell a pop up a little bit or buy a break here. You know, there's a lot of guys down around $4 maybe wanting to buy back some December corn if they've overhedged some stuff. But if we get up in that 4.15 to 4.20 bracket, we're going to see some more hedges being put on. So I think trying to trade a range here, and they aren't giving us a very wide range these last 2 days.
Indeed they aren't, and they may eventually, but, well, I know they will at some point. We'll just have to keep track of it. Hey, thanks so much, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Wayne Nelson. He is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture updated the weekly crop progress report. It shows 5% of the corn crop around the nation has been sown. That compares to the rolling five-year average of 14%. 2% of the soybean crop has been put into the ground, and the rolling five-year average there is also 2%. Taking a look at the oat crop, which is well behind, 31% of that crop now sown, 55% is the normal rolling five-year average. The winter wheat crop is said to be 13% headed. The rolling five-year average is 19%. 25% of that crop is in good condition, 6% excellent. Last week, those numbers were 26% and 5%. Last year, they were 45% good and 9% excellent. 3% of the spring wheat has been sown. The rolling five-year average is 25%. And finally, 11% of the barley crop has been put into the ground. The rolling five-year average is 33%. Now, here are updates from statisticians across the Midwest.
This is Ben Torrance, agricultural statistician for the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Region Field Office. The week began with below normal temperatures, and counties in the northern half of Iowa received snow at midweek before temperatures warmed to near normal by the week's end. Statewide, there were 1.5 days suitable for field work. When conditions allowed, farmers applied anhydrous and dry fertilizer to their fields and seeded oats, with a few scattered reports of corn being planted. Northern Iowa has received an abundance of snow, while southern Iowa is in need of precipitation, with south-central Iowa the driest. 23% of the expected oat crop has been planted, almost 2 weeks behind last year and the five-year average. Below normal temperatures have delayed oat emergence, with just 1% of the crop being reported as emerged, the lowest level at this time since 2001. Extended winter conditions have delayed pasture development. Calving losses have been reported as higher than normal in areas of northern Iowa. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Region Field Office, this is Ben Torrance.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. The string of cold weeks continued across Illinois, but precipitation was below normal and allowed some field work to be completed. The average weekly temperature was 10.9 degrees below normal across the state, but precipitation averaged just over 1/10 of an inch. That was more than 3/4 of an inch below normal rainfall for the week. There were 2.7 days suitable for field work around Illinois. Soil temperatures on Sunday range from the mid-40s in northern parts of the state to the mid-50s in southern areas. Corn planting is now 4% complete, compared to 30% 1 year ago and 20% for the five-year average. There were scattered reports of soybean planting, but not enough to be 1%. 4% of winter wheat acres are heading, compared to 24% 1 year ago and 6% for the five-year average. The condition of the winter wheat crop was reported as 1% very poor, 6% poor, 37 fair, 49 good, and 7% excellent, slightly better than 1 week ago. Pasture conditions were rated 20% very poor to poor, 39 fair, and 41% good to excellent, also slightly better than 1 week ago. This has been Mark Schleusener from the Springfield, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Snow cover, additional precipitation, and cooler temperatures resulted in another week with 0 days suitable for field work. Snow-covered areas were common across much of the state, while the areas clear of snow were too cold and wet for field work. Standing water was reported in some fields, with many reports stating that the frost is still in the ground. Producers kept busy preparing equipment for spring tillage and planting. As of April 22nd, no spring planting was reported. The comparisons to last year and average progress are: spring wheat is 13 percentage points behind last year and 25 points behind the five-year average. Oats, 27 percentage points behind last year and 31 points behind average. Potatoes, 21 percentage points behind last year and 15 points behind average. And sugar beets is 30 percentage points behind last year and 34 points behind the average. Spring calving continues despite the cold, wet weather, and some producers spent time cleaning yards and hauling manure where possible. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
This is Janice Pressberry with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service with the Indiana Crop and Weather Report. Cold weather coupled with snow in some areas continued to delay planting. Average temperatures range from 35 to 51 degrees and from 4 to 16 degrees below normal. The lowest recorded temperature for the week was 14 degrees. The highest, 78 degrees. Ground throughout the state is still cold and wet, but warmer temperatures and high winds helped to dry out some oversaturated fields. Some growers were able to plant corn over the weekend. Stand issues will be a concern in winter wheat where pounding and icing occurred. Fruit crop development is behind normal. The cool conditions have slowed pasture growth, pushing farmers to rely on hay to feed livestock. But with the shortage of hay, some farmers reluctantly made purchases where available. Livestock are reported to be in good condition. Other activities for the week included hauling grain, digging ditches, fertilization, and tilling. That concludes this week's Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending April 22, 2018. This is Janice Pressberry reporting.
Well, we're here at the Gleacher Center in Chicago on Wacker Drive or thereabouts on the upper side of the Magnificent Mile with USDA NAS for their data users group. Lance Honig is with us to tell us a little bit about this particular event. I've been to the users group a couple of times. Lance, what does USDA and NAS hope that happens during the program today?
Well, really, it's a two-way street. When we come here, we want to share some information with the folks who use our data on a regular basis, things that might be new, things we might be looking to do differently in the future, things that we maybe just recently have done. But what's probably even more important than that is we want to get feedback from the folks who are using the data. What are some things that they'd maybe like to see? What are some questions or concerns maybe that they've had with some of the numbers that they've seen over the past year or longer if need be? So again, it's really just a dialogue. It's an opportunity to come together and talk about the information.
We'll maybe hear some more about that when we talk again tomorrow on this program as to what the questions might have been and what USDA may have learned. What are the changes that you might be talking about today?
Well, today we don't really have what I would call extensive changes. There's some minor things that we do each and every year, but this is we're in the midst of a census right now, so that's really a hot topic, is really just talking about what that means when we do a census, not only the information that we gather on the census itself, but what are the implications that that has on our ongoing annual programs year after year. The census really serves as a benchmark, but it also serves as an opportunity to kind of redefine our programs moving forward, because that's the opportunity we have to see everything across the U.S.
This happens every 5 years. It happens to be a late spring, so producers who are still sitting and waiting maybe have the planner ready to go, but nothing else to do, no marketing at this point maybe yet to do, could take some time still and fill that out and send it in, whether they fill out the paper one or do it online.
Absolutely. Data collection is still going on really for probably a couple more months. We want to get as much of that information back as we can, so we're certainly encouraging producers, if you haven't had that opportunity yet, go ahead and jump online and do that. If you've still got the paper form, you can fill that and send it back in, whatever's easiest for them.
I have a question about the May USDA supply and demand reports, the numbers that will go into those. Some of those are collected, of course, by USDA NAS, some of them by the World Agricultural Outlook Board. When you put them together, how much of a weight will the weekly crop progress reports have on the potential yield? I don't think there will be any updates. In fact, I would almost be positive of the acreage, but of the yield potential for the particular crops?
Well, the only crop that NAS will be forecasting, of course, is the winter wheat yield. And as you know, we've talked about really at length last year, I guess it really became obvious. The crop conditions don't factor into the yield estimates or yield forecasts that we make at NAS. We do look at that information. It's good information to help us interpret the other survey data that we have, but the yields that we forecast are going to be based on a combination of the farmer surveys that we do, so we're asking producers to tell us what do you expect your yields to be, and then also our objective yield, where we send our enumerators into the fields to take counts and measures.
Well, let me pick that apart just a little bit. So that in the May, are there potentially no changes to what you're, will the weather have an impact, the planning have an impact on what the numbers look like?
Well, if you get beyond the winter wheat, those other commodities in the WASDE, that's all handled by the World Ag Outlook Board. NAS doesn't have a role in that specifically, so it will be up to them to determine what are the different factors they look at. I'm sure that they probably will be looking at weather. They'll be looking at economics. They'll be looking at the same thing they look at, each and every month when they don't get a yield forecast from NAS. Of course, when NAS does forecast a yield, they incorporate that in. When we don't, they're left to look at what other opportunities they have to base those updates on.
We'll get an opportunity in that case to ask that question, the World Agricultural Outlook Board and the folks that will be here from there. The weekly crop progress reports as they come in, how are those collected?
Well, for the weekly crop progress and condition numbers, we actually reach out to about 3,000 to 4,000 reporters each and every week. They're primarily county extension agents, as well as some local FSA employees, and folks like that, basically. And so we ask them week in and week out, the same folks. That's the important thing. You've got the same people reporting each and every week, or virtually each and every week. So they're providing their input based on what they've either seen, what they've heard from the producers that they've come in contact with, or whatever other information they might have available to them.
Did you learn anything from last year that you were able to deploy potentially this year in changes or in the way you direct those folks?
Well, procedurally, we're doing things the same way we always have. And, I think that's important, because if you look at the numbers, the condition numbers and the progress numbers, it's so important that you can compare that back, not only to previous weeks throughout the season, but back to previous years. You know, the actual progress number, the actual condition rating is probably not as relevant as it is knowing how do they compare to previous seasons, how do they compare to average and things like that. So certainly we want to make sure that we don't do anything drastic. And really probably the biggest thing we learned last year was education, making sure folks understand not only how they're put together, but also how they're used in comparison to the yield forecast that we make throughout the year.
And what is the division there?
Well, the division is that the crop progress and condition ratings are just that. They're an opportunity to give you weekly updates on how the crop might be developing, what sort of things folks are seeing. But when we forecast a yield, as I mentioned, we're not talking to county extension agents or FSA employees. We're talking to producers, and we're asking them specifically. We're not asking them how far along is it or what does it look like. We're saying, what do you expect the yield to be? And then we supplement that with objective yield work, which means we actually send enumerators into those fields. They're counting plants, they're counting heads, ears, pods, whatever it might be. And as we progress far enough, we're actually harvesting portions of those fields and, weighing them, sending them off to the lab for further analysis there.
That, of course, all for the monthly crop production reports that would begin for corn and soybeans in the month of August.
Correct.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Lance Honig, of course, is the chief of the Field Crops Branch at USDA NAS out of Washington, D.C. We're here at the Gleacher Center in Chicago for the USDA Users Group for Data. And Jerry Goodell is with us this afternoon. Jerry, of course, with Price Futures Group out of Chicago. Thanks, Jerry, for being here. Why do you come to this particular meeting?
Well, I come because it's a great opportunity to interact with USDA and also certain issues that come up in the data world. Being an analyst and a broker and that type of thing, it's important that they get some feedback and particularly certain things that crop up along the way. You have an opportunity to meet some of the people involved in those particular divisions here at the USDA, and also at the same time you get a chance to get a sense of where they see the certain things happening in their world, and so you're not blindsided by things coming ahead.
Anything in particular this year that you want to take up with them?
Well, I think the one thing that's been interesting here is the fact that we've kind of had a shifting of the world in the world of corn and soybeans and wheat. Who's the buyers? Who's the sellers? That type of thing. Actually, I'm really kind of interested in pushing the agenda of maybe making some adjustments in the WASDE reports. Currently, the former Soviet Union is in the other category. I think it should really be up in the exporter category in both corn and wheat. Ukraine, in one case, is the one in corn, and the wheat side, of course, is the Russians. And I think that's highly important. That's not so much because the people in the agricultural world understand that they're major exporters, but the same thing is that so much of our agricultural prices are determined by funds and outside investors in that. And if we don't have our particular statistics well organized, I think people misinterpret certain things and don't always get all the details right. And particularly one of the big factors has been the Chinese stocks that have really been insulated from the world. And I think those things also need to maybe have a separate category that would help things move along better. And understanding how much is free available supplies in the world of trading.
Hey, Jerry, good luck getting your questions in with them, and thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Jerry Goodell, of course, is with the Price Futures Group. We're here at the Gleacher Center in Chicago for the USDA NAS User Groups meeting.
It's National Pigs in a Blanket Day. One of the earliest references to pigs in a blanket dates back to 1882, where oysters seasoned with salt and pepper were rolled in a slice of bacon, skewered with a toothpick, and then grilled, broiled, or fried. The recipe comes from the Boston Cookbook. Pigs in a blanket became popular in the U.S. in the 1950s as a meat wrapped in dough. On this day in agricultural history in 1743, Edmund Cartwright was born. Cartwright was an English inventor of the power loom, which improved the speed and quality of weaving. He patented the device in 1785. The invention revolutionized weaving, changing it from a manual process to a mechanical one. Cartwright also invented a machine for combing wool. In 1766, Robert Bailey Thomas was born. He was the founder and longtime editor of the Farmer's Almanac, now known as the Old Farmer's Almanac. In 1833, Jacob Ebert and George Dalty patented the first soda machine. In their heyday, soda fountains flourished in drugstores, ice cream parlors, dime stores, department stores, and train stations. Soda fountains reached their high in the U.S. in the 1940s and 50s. And in 1949, chocolate rationing ended in Britain. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from Busey, empowering individuals with financial education through their Resource Center. For online calculators, planning checklists, and articles, visit Busey.com. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is now here. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, so we've got a lot of things that have been happening across the Midwest in early April. Cold, three or four snowstorms. I think we're through all of that. We should be. However, farmers need to get in the field, so the snow needs to get melted off in the northern part of the Corn Belt, the northern plains, and temperatures need to come up, and we also need not to have rainfall. What of those three things will happen, in your opinion?
Well, I tell you, it's still going to be tough going, and the folks are going to really have to exercise some patience because we do see the weather not as extreme as what we have seen over the last few weeks, but we're still going to see a trend that for most of the nation's midsection as we go through the last days of April into May, it's still more often than not going to be cooler than normal. Now, we do see some warmer weather for some of those northern and northwest Corn Belt areas over the next week or so, especially early next week and late this weekend. There's going to be some warmer air moving in. We don't see as much precipitation either, but there will be a couple of systems moving across the northern plains and northern tier of the U.S. that will still produce some shower and thunderstorm activity, especially late next week and into the following week. So the key here is that the weather will be improving, but a dramatic shift to much warmer, drier conditions where things can dry out and warm up in a hurry, that's just not on the table.
Okay, so here in the Midwest, over the next several days, farmers have begun to roll already planting, at least in parts of Illinois, Indiana, the bulk of the Corn Belt, maybe not all of Iowa yet. What are conditions looking like over the next 4 days or so?
Well, things are looking certainly better. We are going to be looking at the storm track more southerly and more along the East Coast. So for the next 3 to 4 days, some progress will be made. I think it's going to be the hardest in those northern and western areas.
And we've talked quite a bit with meteorologists telling us that we've shifted patterns now, broken out of the blocking that we had in place that caused some of those odd storms we had in April. The westerlies are in control. Does that mean we'll get systems every 3-5 days or something like that for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, we don't see a big old high pressure sitting in and blocking everything. That's just not there yet. That summer high has not shown signs of wanting to develop yet. What we will see is that northern tier from the Pacific Northwest through the northern plains to the northern Great Lakes, that's where a lot of the activity is going to be. And they will drag cold fronts, these systems, through the Midwest. And as you said, it's going to probably be about every 4 or 5 days or so. So while we have broken some of that blocking pattern situation, we are still expecting into early May an active jet stream across that northern tier, which will ultimately impact the Corn Belt. So a slow improvement is the best way to describe it.
Hey, Don, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather. He's from Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're, of course, coming to you today from the Gleacher Center. That's in Chicago at the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Services Users Group meeting. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.